Right. Judges chapter 6. Judges chapter 6, if you've got your Bibles. We will have, Heaven's got us hooked up back there. We'll have those on the screen here in just a minute. So, had several people ask how Reno went. Reno went well. Didn't go great, but it went well. So, thank y'all for asking. If you want more details than that, then you'll have to spend hours with me as I express to you my frustration with Bowling, but we had a good time. We did have a good time. It's good stuff. You know, two of my favorite characters, I don't know if you guys are into Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, but there's some great books, there's some great movies, some shows that have come out in regards to them. But they were on a camping trip one time, and Dr. Watson sets up the tent. And Sherlock Holmes is fixing the meal. They have this wonderful meal, and they go to bed, and they get into their tent, you know, and they're laying down. And in the middle of the night, Sherlock Holmes wakes up and says, "Dr. Watson, what do you see?" And Watson says, "Oh, I see millions and millions of stars." And he says, "And what do you deduce from that?" He says, "Well," and this is, I want to read this part. He pondered a moment. He says, "It's obvious to me that there are millions of galaxies." Should I do it in a British accent? "And potentially billions of planets. I can observe Saturn is within the Leo constellation. It's nighttime. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. It's approximately June 14th. The air appears dry. There's no clouds. I suspect that we'll have a beautiful day tomorrow. Those are my observations. What does it tell you?" And Sherlock Holmes says, "Elementary, Watson. Someone has stolen our tent." Right? I actually thought that was that joke was considered the world's greatest joke a few years ago. That I don't know why, but I think that's really funny. It's obvious, right? I mean, it should be obvious. Sometimes we don't even we see all this stuff, and yet we miss something just right in front of our face. That is exactly Israel. After Deborah had died, the Israelites have again gone into idolatry. They've gone into sinning. Doubting God, not recognizing Him, and they essentially say, which is wonderful, wonderful what Kelly said this morning. You know, their question is, "What's going on, God? Where do you go?" And God's like, "Is it not obvious? The tent's gone." You know, I mean, you're missing the whole point that you guys are looking at how life has turned out, and yet you're not seeing that it's your fault. You keep blaming me, and yet where are you at? You know, the obvious thing is get your life right, follow my commands, do the things I've asked you to do, and a lot of this stuff won't happen. So here we have, you know, in the first chapter of Judges, you've got the Canaanites coming in and causing the problems for the Israelites. And now you have the Midianites and the Amalekites and these other eastern peoples. The Midianites, according to archaeologists and according to historians, were a ruthless people. I mean, they're just coming in and they're taking everything that's not nailed down, essentially. All right. And Israel has to hide in the mountain caves and holes in the ground. So let's look at Judges 6, verses 1 through 12. We've got that perfect. "The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord." Again, the obvious thing, but they missed the obvious. "And so for 7 years, God, He gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts and in caves and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, the Amalekites, and other eastern peoples invaded the country. They camped on the land, they ruined the crops all the way to Gaza, and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep nor cattle nor donkeys. They come up with their livestock, their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count them or their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. When the Israelites cried out to the Lord because of Midian, He sent them a prophet who said, 'This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians. I delivered you from the hand of all your oppressors. I drove them out before you. I gave you their land. I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Don't worship the God of the Americans." Amorites. I have to say that every time. "In whose land you live. But you have not listened to me." There's the tent being gone, right? There's the, "You've not listened to me." "The angel of the Lord came, sat down under the oak in Ophrah, belonging to Joash the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." So the Midianites invade the land. They come in. Not only do they burn the crops, so to speak, or steal the crops, they take everything that's not nailed down. All right. And so imagine if we were living here today and someone came into our homes, came into our church, came into our businesses, and they took anything they wanted, anytime they wanted it. I mean, literally, every time. I mean, whatever's not nailed down. And you say, well, you know, what would you do? And of course, every time I say it, somebody goes, well, I'd nail it down. I'll keep them from getting it, right? But the problem is they're oppressing the people to such a degree that they have to hide. And then we're kind of introduced to Gideon. And he's threshing wheat in a wine press. What do you do in a wine press? You press wine. You stomp grapes. And somewhere in my mind, I can just see I Love Lucy. You know, one of the greatest episodes ever. You know, her in her little cute little outfit, you know, stomping grapes. But Gideon's in the wine press, and it's kind of like, I guess, a modern day hot tub. 4 to 5 feet tall, about 6 foot wide, kind of just a big enclosure. And it's not what you're supposed to do in a wine press. In other words, not threshing wheat. Why is he doing that? Right? He's trying to do everything, you know, low-key, do all the things that he's trying to accomplish so that they don't see what's going on. And I don't know if this angel of the Lord has a sense of humor or not, but all I can see is him threshing this wheat in this wine press and trying to be really quiet, you know? And the angel of the Lord just kind of sneaking up and being like, Gideon! You know, like, wah! You know, I'm coming to see you, Elizabeth, you know, kind of thing. And look at that, I got two 60s TV shows in the same sermon. How good is that, right? So you got a little Sanford and Son going on there. And I don't know if he's afraid or not. I don't know if he has a heart attack or not. But I love this story because look at what he responds. Verse 13. It's just amazing to me. He says, hey, I the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. And Gideon says, but sir, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Well, go back and remember, you have not listened to me. That's part of it. But Gideon's not seeing that necessarily. Where are all his wonders our fathers told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian. Gideon doubts. Maybe he's even a little mad. Maybe he's a little frustrated. And he doesn't understand. But then God kind of shocks Gideon again through this word. Look at verse 14. The Lord turned to him and said, go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? And he's like, strength? Seriously? I'm the weakest person in my family. I come from the smallest clan. If you go back and read Numbers chapter 2 and you read how many soldiers there are to battle in all of those particular tribes, Manasseh, which is the clan that he comes from, is got the least number. It's the smallest clan. It's the weakest clan. Got the least amount of fighting folks, right? And so, kind of like when we play softball, we're the smallest clan. We're like, you know, these churches have 2,000 members, you know, and they're like, wow, we get to choose from, you know, these 1,000 guys, and we choose from who we have here. You know, I'm not saying we can't take care of business, right? But. So we look at this, and Moses says the same thing. Who am I, Lord? Who am I that I should go against Pharaoh? Who am I that I should go fight this battle for you? Who am I? And God says, but you're forgetting something else. On their own, they can't handle that situation. Moses is forgetting the same thing that Gideon is forgetting, and that is verse 16. Go in the strength you have, right? I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive. I'll be with you. I'm going to take care of this for you. I am going to be there, and I'm going to hook you up, right? Kind of like Mason says, I'll take Ken, right? I'll take Ken to be on my side. I'll take God to be on my side, is what the answer I was kind of wanting, but you know, we think of, hey, these battles that take place, and we look sometimes to ourselves. Now, if you were Gideon, would you have believed God? Because you go back and you read Judges 8. I know the Bible sometimes says things like, oh, they were too numerous to count. They're like sand on the seashore. That's kind of like us saying, I don't know how many. There are millions. You know, there weren't millions there. You know, and it's kind of an exaggeration. But in Judges chapter 8, we know we have 135,000 fighting folks. Right? And Gideon is called to fight against them. He needs a little confidence. Does he not? He's like, man, I need a little confidence. If I'm going against 135,000, can you give me a sign? Well, the angel of the Lord is talking to him in this particular passage. And he says, before you leave, can I go fix you some food? And he kind of does this burnt offering. He takes a goat. He takes the ephod flour, which tells you they still had some stuff. They'd hidden it fairly well, right? And so he has this. He prepares it. And the angel says, well, put it on a rock. He puts it on the rock. He pours the broth over it, kind of like, you know, Elijah in that sacrifice that, I don't know, Kelly, are you going to actually preach that when I'm, have you decided, Isaiah? Maybe, you haven't decided. All right. Well, or Elijah, I said Isaiah, 1 Kings 18. But anyway, he fixes the food, he pours the broth over it. The angel of the Lord takes his staff and touches it, and he goes, and just in fire, just burns up. And then I don't know if he touches himself or if he disappears. And it's like, whoa. I mean, that's a good sign. Isn't that a good sign? I mean, if you're needing a sign, if you need to know God's with you and a fire comes flaming up and burns off the sacrifice and that person disappears, you're thinking that's pretty good. The next day, the angel comes back, tells Gideon to destroy Baal's altar. He says, I want you to tear down the Asherah pole and I want you to do all that. And he's like, okay. But the scripture is very plain. He does it at night. He takes 10 of his servants. They wake up the next day. It's torn down. They get all mad about it. They're going to kill him. And yet his father kind of stands up for him and says, you know what? This is, again, going back to 1 Kings 18. His father says, hey, why don't you let Baal take care of his own battle? You know, if he tore down his altar, why don't you let Baal get his revenge? If he's such a great God, then why don't you let him take care of things? Well, nothing happens to Gideon. Gideon kind of gets fired up about that. He gains confidence. Spirit comes on Gideon. He blows the trumpet. And guess what? 32,000 troops show up. 32,000 against 135,000. I mean, that's 4-1 odds. That's not bad. But still Gideon is nervous that God is not with him. So he does the fleece thingy. Remember the fleece thingy? Where he says, God... Yes, it's called a thingy, Kelly. Come on. Okay? It's the fleece thing. So he says, God, I just really need to know that you're here. Even though the poof and all that cool stuff, I didn't die tearing the altar down. But if I put a fleece out and there's just dew on the fleece and it's dry on the ground, then I'll know you're with me. So he gets up the next day, he wrings out the fleece exactly as he asks. And then he's like, one more thing? can I ask just one more? Can we reverse that? Just in case somebody went over there and poured water on it or something. I don't know. You know, I need to know it's you. And so would you let the fleece be dry and the ground be covered in dew? Wakes up the next day. Perfect. He's good. Confident. He's ready. Let's fight the battle, right? He's so excited. He's like, well, 4-1 odds. It's good. You know, and he's like, it's God. Hello. You know, how are you? You've got too many men. Sorry, Lord, I hit a dead spot. Did you say that again? You've got too many men. I don't want you thinking that you can win this battle, because if you have 32,000, 4-1 odds, you may be thinking to yourself, you know what? We did this by ourselves. I want you to realize that I'm with you, that I'm going to take care of this battle for you. And so he says, tell everyone that's afraid. Look at chapter, I don't know if I put chapter 7, verse 3. Did I actually write that for you to put on there? Okay, that's fine. I always forget which ones I tell you to do. So chapter 7, verse 3 says, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So essentially he says, all right, 135,000 to 32,000. If you're afraid, go home. Right? 22,000 guys go, we're afraid, we're out of here. And so he loses 22,000. So here's this dust of 22,000 guys leaving, and 10,000 guys are still there. And he's thinking, okay, 14-1 odds. We still got this. Oh, it's God. Don't you think he was tempted not to answer? Right? So, yes, Lord, you've got too many men. I was afraid you were going to say that. It's like, so here's what I want you to do. I want to let them divide themselves up. Let's just do this. We'll do this a fun way. We're not going to flip a coin. That'd be too many. How about if they go down to the water and take a drink? Those who lap like dogs split on one side. Those who kneel down to drink split them on the other side. So they go down the water. 9,700 guys on the right, 300 guys on the left. Which ones do you think Gideon wanted? 9,700. Which ones do you think he got? We know the story. He got the 300. And so he sends the 9,700 home. So here you've got the far distant dust of 22,000 men and the near distant dust of 9,700 guys. And then you've got 300 guys whose only qualification is that they're not afraid and know how to drink water. Right? 300 guys. But they keep all of the provisions. That's what I love. All of these provisions they keep. So now you got 450-1 odds. So let's look at Judges 7 through 15. I kind of sped through that part of the story. So the Lord said to Gideon, with the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the other men go, each to his own place. So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites to their tents, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and the trumpets of the others. Now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley. During that night, the Lord said to Gideon, get up, go down against the camp, because I'm going to give it into your hands. If you're afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah and listen to what they're saying. Afterward, you'll be encouraged to attack the camp. So he and Purah, his servant, went down to the outposts of the camp. And I'm going to skip to verse 13. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling his friend a dream. I had a dream. I had a dream. Somebody else said that once. A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed. His friend responded, this can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands. When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he returned to the camp. He calls out, get up. The Lord has given the Midianites into your hands. I love this story. Say, Mike, there's nothing to get emotional about in that story. Everything. Whew. How many times you worship God? Because you see the great things that he does. I look at this story and I see God's hand in these battles. Gideon's still afraid. He's reminded over and over and over again, and yet he's still afraid and he's still nervous. And yet God still just blesses him. And he does that with us. I'm just impressed with Gideon's... I said that wrong. I'm not impressed with Gideon's lack of faith, but I am impressed with how God impresses on him that he's with him, that he's trying to help him. And I don't think we pay attention sometimes to that fact that God is with us too. That God is trying to help us realize that, hey, I'm with you. I'm here too. And yet we don't see it, and we don't get the fleece stuff, and we don't get the dream stuff. But yet there are things in our life where I think God is trying to help us realize, hey, I'm here. I think coming here on Sundays and doing what we do and spending time together on Wednesdays is reminders to each of us. You know, it's an important couple times a week to be reminded, hey, God is with us, you know, as a people. There are other people that believe just like I do, and that God is working through things, and that he wants us to gain the victory, and we just need to trust him. I get so mad when I can't talk the way I want. I don't know if Gideon worshiped God before this moment in time. Maybe he did. I don't know. But it's sad to think that here's a tribe of Israel who got to experience, and sometimes we say that. I mean, I know my own kids are saying, I wish God would do something like that and that we could see that. You know, and then I'm reminded of Jesus who says, hey, blessed are you who haven't seen, like Rahab, as we talked about just, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, who heard the stories and believed because of the stories. And sometimes my faith is just not that strong. And I want to be more bold, and I want to be more of a warrior. And then I forget sometimes that God's with me, just like Gideon. And I want to remind us of that this morning. The rest of the story, Gideon splits them up into groups of 100. They get these amazingly cool weapons, right? You know, you're like, yes, tanks, bazookas. No, he gives them a jar and a torch and a trumpet. And I almost want to think in the story that Gideon's like, okay, guys, you know, and they're thinking 451, we can do this. You know, and they're not afraid. They're there. They know how to drink water. And he's like, okay, we're going to surround the camp. And they got a trumpet, you know, and a torch and a jar. And it's kind of a cool deal because, you know, they break the glass all at once, the jars at once. They're surrounded. Ba-ba-da! They blow the trumpet. And a sword for the Lord, a sword for Gideon. And the camp goes into bedlam. I guess they all wake up and they look around and they see everything and they hear everything. And they think, wow, we're dead. And they fight among themselves. You can read the rest of the story. And 120,000 of them kill each other. Gideon's guys are just kind of hanging around on the outside going, this is great. You know, eating popcorn and watching the bedlam. And they're running off, and then they sound the trumpet, get some other tribes, and they chase them all out, and they rout them out of the land. And you go, woo-hoo! You know, a victory for the Israelites. They didn't need that kind of victory. The reason the Midianites were there to begin with is because they wouldn't listen to God. Because they didn't pay attention to what God is saying. A lot of the things that took place is like what we talked about in class this morning. Proverbs 19, verse 3, talks about, you know, things that happen in life are bad choices or bad decisions, and yet people want to blame God for it. The Israelites are blaming God for the oppression, and they don't even recognize that it's their disobedience to God. It's their inability to listen to God that causes all this. I think God gives us the same victories. You say, well, wait a minute, Mike. You know, I mean, you talk about Moses and Noah and Abraham and Gideon and all these different characters. And you say, but they're called by God. They were chosen by God for a specific purpose. We're not chosen by God. We're not called like they were called. Well, turn to 1 Corinthians 1, 26 through 30. I'll remind you of a passage of Scripture that I think is just as powerful as Judges chapter 6. It says, brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. I think he's talking to us. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many of you were influential. Not many of you were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world, the despised things, and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. Oh, verse 29, what was that? He chose the weak so that no one would boast before him, so that they would know, that we would know, that God is with us. That 300 can beat 135,000. And that when we look at the world and we go, man, I mean, we were in a place in Reno this last few days for a bowling tournament, but that's a pretty interesting place. It's a very worldly place. And you felt like the minority by far, that, you know, living the right life and doing the right kinds of things. But no one may boast before him. It's because of him. Okay, it's because of him that you're in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God. That is our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Kelly touched on this as well. But Peter tells us in 1 Peter 2:9, not on a slide, but you are a chosen people. You're a royal priesthood, all right? You're a holy nation, a people belonging to God. Once you were no people, now you're God's people. Once you hadn't received mercy, now you have received mercy. So you have all these passages reminding us that God is with us, that he's chosen us to do some of these same things. We were called by God. When difficult circumstances come our way, when impossible situations arise, when doubts enter our mind, we should be reminded, God is with us. We can do this, okay, but not by ourselves. He told Gideon, I will be with you. I went through and I looked at a few of these. Exodus 3:12 to Moses. I will be with you. To Jeremiah in Jeremiah 1:8, don't be afraid of them, for I am with you. I will rescue you. To Jacob, behold, I am with you. Genesis 28:15. But the Lord was with Joseph, Genesis 39 tells us. To Israel, be strong and courageous in Deuteronomy 31. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. For the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. To Joshua, the Lord thy God is with you, Joshua 1:9. To David, to Solomon, to the apostles, Matthew 28:20. Lo, I'm with you always, even unto the end of the world. Then he says to us in Hebrews 13:5, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. Verse 6, so we can say with confidence, the Lord's my helper, I'm not afraid. What can mere mortals do to me? I think I forgot to give you the prompt to get to Hebrews. What can man do to me? I got the Lord with me. And we just forget those promises. Some people say, well, I'm too old for that, or I can't make an impact. If God is for us, who can be against us? I can do all things through Christ. Are not the promises just in the Scriptures that God is with us, that we can do the things that we want to do? And yet it's still hard for us to have that kind of faith at times. And I just want to encourage you to let your faith grow, to trust God in His promises, to be emblazoned, to be emboldened. I can't even think of the word I wanted to use there, but I'll think of it in a second. To be more bold, okay, in your faith, to believe those promises. I love what John Wesley said. John Wesley said, give me 100 men who fear nothing but sin and desire nothing but God, and I'll shake the world. I think that's a great quote. And I think that open door may be the smallest among the softball guys. Okay, and we may not be the biggest congregation, but we can do great things for God. I know that we are developing this mission statement, developing this vision, trying to think about this question. And I know the elders would like this question to be addressed soon and very soon. Why are we here? Right? Why are we here? What is our main purpose? And we can answer that in many different ways. But as a congregation, we need to think about that as we move forward as a church and say, what are we going to do? Well, how are we going to impact this community? What do we want to be known for? And so that's just good stuff. That's just good stuff. We should never fear that God will leave us alone. So let's make sure we hold on to those promises this morning. I love Bible characters. I love looking through and reminding myself of their faith and their challenges, and yet they overcame them with God's help, and we can do the same. If there's something we can do this morning, we're going to sing a song. Jim's got us a song. If there's something we can do as a congregation for you, pray for you in any way, please come while we stand and while we sing.